session number 10421, Reel 10.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, Reel 10. We were talking about the special unit in Scotland, Mr. Thornton. What date did you get there?
About mid-June 1940.
Can you tell me its official title?
Yes, it was the Special Training Centre, Loch Islet.
You referred to two American civilians who came to train you. Do you recall any?
Yes, one was Mr. Fairburn, and the other one was Mr. Sykes. They were getting on, as far as we were concerned. I think the older one was getting on to 65, and the younger one was probably 59 or so. And they had been police commissioners in Shanghai. The younger one was a judo black belt holder, and the older one was an expert revolver shot. Not revolver, called automatic, that they used to use in his job. Their job was to teach us a different way of shooting to the normal British Army way of weapons, like the Tommy gun and the Colt automatic, plus what they called close combat, which was took the two in, close combat with weapons and without weapons. The things that holds and throws and various little tricks like tying a man to a tree without any rope, which we call the grapevine. They call it the grapevine. You selected a tree, and if you took a prisoner and you wanted him, you couldn't take him with you, and you wanted him to stay there. You selected a tree, and you put one leg round the tree at the front, then you took his other leg, say you put his right leg round, you put his other leg, passed it over the instep of his right leg, and pulled his foot round the other side of the tree and pushed him down. Now, the harder he tried to climb up the tree, the tighter his legs became, so he couldn't get off the tree at all. And when we demonstrated this to the students, of course, we always had to stand behind them for fear they slipped back, because if they slipped back, they'd have tore the insides, which chaps would have done if they were left long enough when they got tired and dropped back, and they'd rupture themselves completely. That was one of the little nasty things that they taught us. And as I say, the older chap taught us the Colt automatic, which was had 7 rounds in a clip. It was a marvellous shot. He could put his 7 rounds into a running target in about seven seconds. And of course, he taught us how to use it. Now, these two people went down to High, the small arms school, which had been on lines for years and years, and they changed the whole system of weapons. They taught us how to shoot like a cowboy. That instead of the as the officers with the pistols, you put a straight arm and get the eye. They were teaching to put the arm in the middle of the body and face the target. And as you moved round, you moved your body round, kept your pistol in the centre. And fired that way. So they were very useful, indeed. Eventually, they were commissioned into the British Army. They were put in what's called the General Service Corps. They wore a badge in the cap was the same as the coat of arms, which was no regiment, just the corps, and they were made captains.
And this is while they were with you, they became?
Yes, they became with us. They came as civilians. As I say, they were commissioned. We had another two civilians, of course, on the staff. One old man, must have been 60, And a friend, another friend of his, were both stalkers, civilian ghillies and things like that. But they were there for the hills, take officers out, show them how to shoot deer, how to stalk deer, how far to get up to them before they shot them so they didn't just wound them, how to kill them. And it was marvellous to see this old chap, 60, going up the hills. White-haired, yet he did it, been doing it all his life.
The two Americans, they were never. Did they ever tell you how they came to be in your unit? Was it through the American government loaning them, or?
Well, we're never going to know that really. How it really happened.
America wasn't.
But obviously, there'd been a liaison between the governments to get these two chaps.
Can you tell me, you mentioned high altitude rations, were they anything different from normal?
No, except we got more, because of the far north of Scotland, plus our intensive and hard training, they said we needed more food than the normal soldier. So we got this extra ration, plus the fact that they opened a special naffy for the sergeants. The men had their naffy, always have a naffy, men. Where we had a science mess, you couldn't get anything to eat after a certain time. Where the men could, after their supper in the army, they could run over to the naffy and get an extra little bit. So they opened a special canteen with a naffy with a girl to serve the science mess, where we could go and get dinners at night time.
Was this a secret camp? Was it a hush-hush camp?
More or less. It was a restricted area. Because all around that area were commands. It was so restricted that if you look at that, that was sent by me to my wife 46 years ago. Opened by examiner, passed by the censor.
A registered letter with the examiner.
Yeah.
2537. Mm. So it was as controlled as that.
Yes.
The area.
Now, as well as that, we got. I think it was one green envelope. A green envelope was an envelope printed in green letters that you could send home without an officer opening it. Because in normal circumstances, you have to show your officer your letter, an ordinary one, before it would be sent. But a green envelope, you didn't. But a green envelope could still be stopped. But normally they weren't. You could write a little bit more private things in one of those, so that nobody would, you knew none of the officers in the camp or any censor in the camp could read it.
Had you any information as to how men were selected to come to the unit, or was there any?
Well, no. It was. They came by commando NCOs. They weren't. They were selected because they were commando NCOs, and they came for this particular course. Later on, of course, when we run through the commandos, they start to send men up from ordinary battalions, and then complete officers, platoons came up, majors, captains, and so we would have a complete platoon of officers to teach.
So these men that were coming to you were NCOs or officers, and they went
back
to your units?
Yes, NCO and officer, and went back with that knowledge to their units.
I see. Can you describe the various types of training that you were putting yourselves under? Well, you were receiving and the men were receiving.
Yes, well, there was seven of us at the time who were what they call SIs. So besides that, we had three Lovett scouts who were, before the war started, a private army of Lord Lovett. And they were on the staff, and they taught the sniper rifle, and also they were the same type as the old chap I was telling about, the civilian. They could walk miles and miles over the hills. They knew all the area, and of course they were used in the thing, but I can come to more of that later on. Then we had the signal instructors. We had two sergeants for teaching signal procedure, etc. Then we had the Royal Engineers. Three Royal Engineers and an officer, and they we had our squads, and we would take them over to the REs, double them over the REs for their lesson, And then, of course, that meant that we were getting taught RE work as well. So that it finished, I knew how to blow the railway lines up. I knew how to make a ring main, which is an explosive, that would blow various parts all together once you put the fuse, and it would blow the lot. How to use a plastic explosive, where you could put a ring of plastic round, say, a detonator and light it, and it would blow a hole straight through. The railway line, of course, you had to know how to deal with it, because you put a block of gun cotton on the railway line, and you would what they call tamp it, which means you got a load of mud, and you stuck it on one side, so that the power of the explosion would go all one way. Okay. We had, of course, as well as those people, we had an education warrant officer. Now, his main job, he was a map reading expert. He could pinpoint and go to any place in a mountain where we would be completely lost. So he would be teaching map reading and taking parties out. Everybody got a map, he'd set them out and try to get there, because he would be there to see them in the right place. His other part was he was a Frenchwoman. And he spoke fluent French, and he would teach French as well. That was his main job. Then we had some RASC. They didn't do a lot, but one of the things they did was improvisation of transport. It was amazing. We had horses there, and we had a sergeant of Scots Grays. He was a horseman, but the improvisation of transport, if you saw a sheep with 12 mortar bombs strapped to it, they would be used in the emergency to carry mortar bombs. The horses to carry anything you wanted. Then they had one of those little trap-like sulky riding with a little cart with a horse in it. They had one of those there, teaching people to be able to hold a horse and get it cracking on various things. And it was amazing the things that you use, goats even, to use. But of course, they were held. They weren't just allowed to go, or halted them to lead them on and carry these bombs. That takes up the instructors. I think, and the things that they did there. There was all sorts of new weapons that came out, and we did a lot of experimenting on our own. You had the sticky tank bomb, which was like a toffee apple, only bigger, size of a small football, a very small football, and that was covered in, encased in glass, with glue around it, and a hand lock, a grenade lever, run up to a tank with it, unseen of course, and stick it under the body. It would smash the glass, and that would allow the sticky stuff to adhere to the tank, and then the handle would fly off, and the power, it would all go one way, and that was into the tank. But you had to watch it, because the handle was dangerous. That could fly and hit you if you were in the road. But the captain of the REs, when he was demonstrating this sticky tank bomb for the first time that we'd seen, said we had to get behind a little wall. But he wouldn't. He said, "I'll see to show you where the power goes." And it was summer, and it was a pretty hot day, and he had shorts on. Well, he never thought, of course, and he finished up with glass splinters in his legs. He'd been too clever, the little glass splinters coming off the bomb itself. We had the 69 grenade, which was a Baker-like grenade. That was mainly used for effect, but it could be dangerous. If it hit you, then it could kill you. There was a little ball inside this grenade that was used to activate the detonator when it, because it was a cushion grenade. It exploded when it hit the ground. There's a little ball there that could fly out, so you had to watch that. Then there was the phosphorus grenade. That was a nasty one. I remember when it was being demonstrated, I was watching, and we went forward to have a look, and I put my hand on a tree there, and it was covered in phosphorus, and I was burning. I had to get away straight to the medical centre, because it would just eat and eat and eat as soon as it contacted any water or anything like that. So then there was the 75, another grenade, which was like the shape of a water bottle. That was used to lay on the ground in front of tanks, and that was very powerful. I'll probably tell you something about later on in another part when we get to another place where I used it. That's about it for the instructions and things. But we also had to do little exercises of our own. One particular one, we had to escape from the castle, and we had the enemy scouts. We had to escape from the castle and make our way to a certain point. Well, we got out of the castle, and of course the railway line run past the castle a little bit high up over a little viaduct. We got under there, and we said, champion, we're away. And all of a sudden, a voice shouted, okay, you're finished. One of the Lovett scouts. Big chap, he was, never heard him. So, anyhow, he said, righto, well, we'll let you go this time. Carry on with your exercise. So we said, right. So off we went, and Big Jack Young, who was an instructor with me, and another chap, Jack could drive at the time. So we pinched the signals truck and drove up the road and got away. Of course, the truck broke down. And next morning, of course, we had to answer to the signals and the CO about it. Nothing was said because it was an exercise, and we did. We thought we things like that. And there's always something happening there. The we used the open ground for the range. The farmers, it was a mountain behind it, and his cows were in there, and one particular day we were firing on the range, and all of a sudden a farmer came shouting out, they've shot the range. Well, we hadn't. What had happened, this was later on when it was cold, the cow had eaten some frosted grass, and it made it ill, and it had fallen over. He thought we'd shot it. So that's, there's ammunition flying all over the place. There's a road running by, and a river, and then there's a wall separating it from the lock, and we just used to throw them over there and just bend behind the wall. And of course then the farmer and it was the base plug of the grenade, the one that screws on the bottom to put your detonator in. That didn't break in pieces, that just one lump came over, but it was accepted that we were practicing for war, for landings and things like that. We had an opposed landing. One of the officers, 6'6", this officer, and he made his way across the lock to the other side, and when he got, the REs were there with their gun cutting slabs, and unfortunately he got in the road and blew his leg off. He came back and he said, well, I've still got 6 foot above the earth. Of course, naturally, he'd be finished with the army. Then one of the instructors, major instructors, went with the mortars doing a demonstration. He got a shrapnel in the back of his leg, and he just carried on teaching for another half hour. Got back to the camp, went into hospital, and died on the operating table. He choked. It wasn't a really serious wound. It was serious, not serious enough to kill him. And he died, he choked, so nobody understood why, because he obviously hadn't had any food for quite a while, but he did choke to death. I can remember his name, Major Hamilton. And that was another sad thing. There were quite a few more deaths there and wounds. I was throwing a grenade with sergeants up on the hill this time, and the sergeant threw one, and I said, get down. And I lay down at the same time, after we'd seen where it landed, and I just lay down like that, behind a rock. Next thing that happened, there was a gripping thump in my wrist, and the blood spurted out. It wasn't a rock I was behind, it was a lump of heather. So I had to make my way a mile with holding to keep the blood out and go to the medical inspection room. And off I went to hospital. They x-rayed me. And for 3 days later, they decided to take this lump of shrapnel out. Unfortunately, it had moved in the bloodstream. And when he came to operate with the medic, he got his tweezers, slit my wrist, got his tweezers out, opened it up, got his fingers in, the tweezers in, and went below the anaesthetic. The nurse was holding my arm there, and the sweat was just running off me. I've never felt so much pain in all my life. But anyhow, he got it out, he said, there you are, and he dropped it in hand. I kept that piece, but got lost during the war sometime. We had the commandos there, of course, and many things happened. They once chased a deer. They caught it and killed it. It was winter. That deer was cut up, put in the snow, and every now and again we'd whip out, get a lump of venison, get our mess tins out on the old combustion stove, get it ourselves some venison. That went on for a while. that's how. We got a little bit fed up later on, because we said to the warrant officer in charge, look, we want promotion. We are doing a job here that should warrant a promotion. So anyhow, they inquired about that. And we expected to get staff sergeants, something like that, you see. And when it came through, it was a special war office posting, and there was none like it in the army. In schools, there's a rank, W02, is called a QMSI, which is a quartermaster sergeant instructor. And they're normally in the school of cookery, a small arms school, or any schools, but never any in an infantry. There isn't any. He's company sergeant major. Well, when it came back, we were all promoted to QMSIs, which meant a difference of 6 a day to 11 shillings, because a QMSI was 1 and 6 months more than company sergeant major. So we were absolutely overjoyed. So there we were, there I was at. Now this promotion had nothing to do with the regiment. The regiment couldn't stop, as a sergeant at that time, they couldn't stop this promotion because it was a special war office promotion. And so I was there 24 years of age with a crown and wreath round on my arm.
And you kept it when you moved through the battalions?
Well, you see, yes, you had to, because if you held warrant officer rank for 9 months, you were made war substantive, which means your rank could not be taken from you without a court-martial while the war was on. So therefore I kept my rank all the time, the same as the other chaps that... Now, the warrant officer from the small arms school that was there, was a QBSI, got a commission, and he was promoted to lieutenant in the Somerset Light Infantry, because he had to go to a regiment to be... But he did go away. He still was an instructor at the school. The head warrant officer too was made class one. So we finished it. We still had to call them both, sir.
Warrant officer, you just mentioned there. Was this the person involved with educating you in to a higher intellectual level, or was it something to do?
Well,
with
he's your from work? It was from the. But as I say, his main job was map reading and French. Not particularly yours, but he did open a class that we could go to learn French. Now, I must mention one thing. We took the whole syndicate, as it was, so many platoons, with the officers, on a mountain climb, not a climb, a mountain march over the mountains in the snow. And this particular time, we did the march, and... we had rucksacks, naturally. And we got to the top of this mountain about 2,000 feet called Roche Ben. And from Roche Ben, this mountain, you could see our camp. So the officer in charge said, right, you can all make your way back now. Stupid. Decide to go down the face of the mountain instead of the ridge, like the fuel board did. But we got so far down, and suddenly we were stuck. Our backs with our for half an hour. Edging with our heels along to get to a place where it was safe. We were frozen stiff, but eventually we managed to drop down into a part where there was no ice and snow. And gradually off we went, going back to camp. And all of a sudden, we heard whistles and shouts and cries. So, it's something that happened, of course. Well, we didn't know. Two of the lads, instructors with me, started to climb back up the hill to see what had happened. Paddy Ryan, the Scots Grey, who wasn't used to marching a lot, was getting a little bit delirious. So I went down, further down the mountain, and carried him. And I carried him 3 miles, not on my back, but he wanted to lay down in the snow and go to sleep. And he was about an 11 or 12 stone man. And I held him for 3 miles and got him back to camp and into the barrack room. And I went to sleep and I didn't wake up for 12 hours. Next morning, we were woken up. We had to go back and up to the mountain again. What had happened, a paratroop corporal had fallen down and killed himself. He fell about 600 feet. The other chap, another corporal, had fallen down, but he was stopped. He got a fractured skull. So we took the pack horses up, and we put him on. He was stiff as a board. Put him on the pack horse, and we had to get him down, hold his body onto the horse, and get him to the medical inspection room. So that was another one that was killed there. It was a pretty dangerous. The dangerous course that they were on. Men getting nearly drowned in the river, because we're always in the river, crossing the river up to shore on ropes, but because if you got swept away, that was it. You had to be rescued.
Did you have any special clothing at all?
No, just no. The only thing we had to work in when it was very wet and raining was and gumboots.
Is there anything more you can tell me, Mr. Howard?
Well, we illustrations for these students, such as weapons, trajectory of a bullet, which we use with tracer, demonstrating the anti-tank rifle, the grenade and discharger cup, which I can talk about later on.